take first watch. Alec nodded and started to move toward the nearest cave entrance. The rest of them followed. Clary fell into step beside Jace. He was silent, lost in thought. Under the heavy cloud cover, his hair glinted a dull gold, and she could see the massive rips in the back of his gear jacket where the demon's claws had taken hold. The corner of his mouth quirked up suddenly.
What?
Clary demanded. Is something funny?
Flying death turtle, he said. Only you.
Only me? Is that good or bad? She asked as they reached the cave entrance, looming up before them like an open, dark mouth. Even in the shadows, his smile was quicksilver. It's perfect. They made it only a few feet into the tunnel before they found the way blocked with a metal gate. Alec cursed, looking back over his shoulder. The cave entrance was just behind them, and through it, Clary could see orange sky and dark, circling shapes.
No, this is good, Jace said, stepping closer to the gate. Look, runes.
Runes were indeed worked into the curves of the metal, some familiar, some Clary didn't know. Still, they spoke to her of protection, of the fending off of demonic forces, a whisper in the back of her head.
They're protection runes, she said. Protection against demons.
Good, said Simon, casting another anxious glance back over his shoulder. Because the demons are coming, fast.
Jace shot a glance behind them, then seized the gate and yanked at it. The lock burst, shedding flakes of rust. He pulled again, harder, and the gate swung open. Jace's hands were shimmering with suppressed light, and the metal where he had touched it looked blackened. He ducked into the darkness beyond, and the others followed, Isabel reaching for her witchlight. Simon came after, then Alec last, reaching out to slam the gate shut behind them. Clary took a moment to add a locking rune, just to be sure. Izzy's witchlight flared up, illuminating the fact that they were standing in a tunnel that snaked forward into darkness. The walls were smooth, marbled nice, carved over and over again with runes of protection, holiness, and defense. The floor was sanded stone, easy to walk on. The air grew clearer as they made their way deeper into the mountain, the taint of fog and demons slowly receding until Clary was breathing more easily than she had since they had come to this realm. They emerged at last into a large circular space, clearly crafted by human hands. It looked like the inside of a cathedral dome, round, with a massive ceiling arching overhead. There was a fire pit in the center of the room, long gone cold. White stone gems had been set into the ceiling. They glowed softly, filling the room with dim illumination. Isabel lowered her witchlight, letting it blink off in her hand.
I think this was a place to hide, Alec said in a hushed voice. Some sort of last barricade where whoever lived here once would be safe from the demons.
Whoever lived here once knew rune magic, Clary said. I don't recognize them all, but I can feel what they mean. They're holy runes, like Raziel's. Jace slung his pack off his shoulders and let it slide to the ground.
We're sleeping here tonight.
Alec looked dubious.
You sure that's safe?
We'll scout the tunnels, Jace said.
Clary, come with me. Isabel, Simon, take the east corridor.
He frowned.
Well, we're going to call it the East Corridor.
Here's hoping that this is still accurate in the demon realms. He tapped the compass rune on his forearm, which was one of the first marks most shadow hunters received. Isabel dropped her pack, took out two seraph blades, and slid them into holsters on her back.
Fine.
I'll go with you, Alec said, looking at Isabel and Simon with suspicious eyes.
If you must, said Isabel with exaggerated indifference.
I should warn you, we'll be making out in the dark. Big, sloppy make-outage.
Simon looked startled.
We are, he began, but Isabel stomped on his toe and he quieted.
Make-outage? Said Clary. Is that a word?
Alec looked ill.
I suppose I could stay here.
Jace grinned and tossed him a steely.
Make a fire, he said. Cook us a pie or something. This demon hunting is hungry work.
Alec drove the steely into the sand of the pit and began drawing the rune for fire. He appeared to be muttering something about how Jace wouldn't like it if he woke up in the morning with all of his hair shaved off. Jace grinned at Clary. Under the ichor and blood, it was a ghost of his old impish grin, but good enough. She took out Heosphorus.
Simon and Isabel had already disappeared down the east-facing tunnel. She and Jace turned the other way, which sloped slightly downward. As they fell into step, Clary heard Alec yell from behind them.
And your eyebrows, too!
Dryly, Jace chuckled.
Maya wasn't sure what she'd thought being pack leader would be like, but it hadn't been this. She was sitting on the big desk in the lobby of the second precinct building, bat in the swivel chair behind her, patiently explaining various aspects of Wolfpack administration. How they communicated with members of the Praetor Lupus in England, how messages were sent back and forth from Idris, even how they managed orders placed at the Jade Wolf restaurant. They both looked up when the doors burst open and a blue-skinned warlock woman in nurse's scrubs stalked into the room, followed by a tall man in a sweeping black coat.
Katerina Lars, Bat said by way of introduction. Our new pack leader, Maya Roberts.
Katerina waved him away. She was very blue, almost a sapphire color, and had glossy white hair piled into a bun. Her scrubs had trucks on them.
This is Malcolm Fade, she said, gesturing to the tall man beside her.
High Warlock of Los Angeles.
Malcolm Fade inclined his head. He had angular features, hair the color of paper, and his eyes were purple. Really purple, a color no human eyes ever were. He was attractive, Maya thought, if you liked that sort of thing.
Magnus Bane is missing, he announced as if it were the title of a picture book.
And so is Luke, said Katerina grimly.
Missing? Maya echoed. What do you mean, missing?
Well, not missing exactly, kidnapped, said Malcolm, and Maya dropped the pen she was holding. Who knows where they could be?
He sounded as if the whole thing was rather exciting, and he was sad not to be a greater part of it.
Is Sebastian Morgenstern responsible? Maya asked Katerina.
Sebastian captured all the Downworld representatives. Melior, Magnus, Raphael, and Luke, and Jocelyn, too. He's holding them, he says, unless the Clave agrees to give him Clary and Jace.
And if they don't? Asked Leela. Katerina's dramatic entrance had brought the pack out, and they were filing into the room, draping themselves over the stairwell and huddling up to the desk in the curious manner of lycanthropes.
Then he'll kill the representatives, said Maya. Right?
The Clave must know that if they let him do that, then Downworlders will rebel, Bat said. It would be tantamount to declaring that the lives of four Downworlders are worth less than the safety of two Shadowhunters.
Not just two Shadowhunters, Maya thought. Jace was difficult and prickly, and Clary had been reserved at first, but they had fought for her and with her. They had saved her life, and she had saved theirs.
Handing Jace and Clary over would be murdering them, Maya said, and with no real guarantee that we'd get Luke back.
Sebastian lies. Katerina's eyes flashed.
If the Clave doesn't at least make a gesture toward getting Magnus and the others back, they won't just lose the Downworlders on their council. They'll lose the Accords.
Maya was quiet for a moment. She was conscious of all the eyes on her. The other wolves watching for her reaction, for their leader's reaction. She straightened.
What is the word from the warlocks? What are they doing? What about the fair folk and the nice children?
Most of the Downworlders don't know, said Malcolm. I shared the news with Katerina because of Magnus. I thought she ought to know. I mean, this sort of thing doesn't happen every day. Kidnapping, ransoms, love, sundered by tragedy.
Shut up, Malcolm, said Katerina. This is why no one ever takes you seriously.
She turned to Maya. Look, most of Downworld knows that the Shadowhunters packed up and went to Idris, of course. They don't know why, though. They're waiting for news from their representatives, which, of course, hasn't come.
But that situation can't hold, said Maya. Downworld will find out.
Oh, they'll find out, said Malcolm, looking as if he were trying hard to be serious.
But you know, Shadowhunters, they keep themselves to themselves. Everyone knows about Sebastian Morgenstern, of course, and the Dark Nephilim, but the attacks on the Institutes have been kept fairly quiet.
They have the Warlocks of the Spiral Labyrinth working on a cure for the effects of the Infernal Cup, but even they don't know how urgent the situation is or what's been happening in Idris, Katerina said. I fear the Shadowhunters will wipe themselves out with their own secrecy.
She looked even bluer than before. Her color seemed to change with her mood.
So why come here to us, to me? Maya asked.
Because Sebastian already brought his message to you through his attack on the Praetor, Katerina replied. And we know you're close with the Shadowhunters, the Inquisitor's children and Sebastian's own sister, for instance. You know as much as we do, maybe more, about what's going on.
I don't know that much, Maya admitted. The wards around Idris have been making it hard for messages to get through.
We can help with that, said Katerina. Call me Malcolm.
Hmm?
Malcolm was idly wandering around the station, stopping to stare at things Maya thought of as every day. A banister railing, a cracked tile in the wall, a pane of window glass, as if they were revelatory. The pack watched him in puzzlement. Katerina sighed.
Don't mind him, she said to Maya in an undertone. He's quite powerful, but something happened to him at the beginning of last century, and he's never quite been right since. He's pretty harmless.
Help? Of course we can help, Malcolm said, turning round to face them. You need to get a message through? There's always carrierkins.
You mean pigeons? Said Bat. Carrier pigeons.
Malcolm shook his head.
Carrierkins, they're so cute, no one can deny them. Fix your mouse problem, too.
We don't have a mouse problem, said Maya.
We have a megalomaniac problem. She looked at Katerina. Sebastian's determined to drive wedges between Downworlders and Shadowhunters. Kidnapping the representatives, attacking the Praetor, he won't stop there. All of Downworld will know soon enough what's going on. The question is, where will they stand?
We will stand bravely with you, Malcolm announced. Katerina looked darkly at him, and he quailed.
Well, we will stand bravely near you, or at least within earshot.
Maya gave him a hard look.
So no guarantees, basically.
Malcolm shrugged.
Warlocks are independent and hard to get hold of, like cats but with fewer tails.
Well, there are some tails, I don't have one myself.
Malcolm, said Katerina.
The thing is, Maya said, either the Shadowhunters win or Sebastian does, and if he does, he'll come for us, for all Downworlders. All he wants is to turn this world into a wasteland of ashes and bone. None of us will survive.
Malcolm looked faintly alarmed, though not anywhere near as alarmed, Maya thought, as he ought to. His overwhelming aspect was one of innocent, childlike glee. He had none of Magnus's wise mischief. She wondered how old he was.
I don't think we can get into Idris to fight beside them like we did before, Maya went on. But we can try to get the word out. Reach other Downworlders before Sebastian does. He'll try to recruit them. We have to make them understand what joining up with him will mean.
The destruction of this world, said Bat.
There are high warlocks in various cities. They'll probably consider the issue. But we're loners, like Malcolm said, replied Katerina. The fair folk are unlikely to talk to any of us. They never do.
And who cares what the vampires do? Snapped Leela. They turn on their own anyway.
No, said Maya after a moment. No, they can be loyal. We need to meet with them. It's high time the leaders of the New York Pack and Vampire Clan formed an alliance. A shocked murmur ran around the room. Werewolves and vampires didn't parley unless brought together by a larger outside force like the Clave.
She reached her hand out to Bat.
Pen and paper, she said, and he gave it to her. She scrawled a quick note, tore off a sheet of paper, and handed it to one of the younger wolf pups.
Take this to Lily at the Dumort, she said. Tell her I want to meet with Maureen Brown. She can pick a neutral location. We'll approve it before the meeting. Tell him it should be as soon as possible. The lives of both our representative and theirs might depend on it.
I want to be mad at you, Clary said. They were making their way down the snaking tunnel. Jace was holding her witchlight, its illumination guiding them. She was reminded of the first time he had pressed one of the smooth carved stones into her hand.
Every shadow hunter should have their own witchlight runestone.
Oh, Jace said, casting a wary glance at her. The ground under their feet was polished smooth, and the walls of the corridor curved inward gracefully. Every few feet, a new rune was carved into the stone.
What for?
Risking your life, she said. Except you didn't, really. You were just standing there and the demon grabbed you. Admittedly, you were being obnoxious to Simon.
If a demon grabbed me every time I was obnoxious to Simon, I'd have died the day you met me.
I just... She shook her head. Her vision was blurring with exhaustion, and her chest ached with longing for her mother, for Luke, for home. I don't know how I got here.
I could probably retrace our steps, Jay said. Straight through the ferry corridor, left at the decimated village, right at the blasted plain of the damned, sharp U-turn at the heap of dead demon.
You know what I mean. I don't know how I got here. My life was ordinary. I was ordinary.
You've never been ordinary, Jay said, his voice very quiet.
Clary wondered if she'd ever stop being dizzied by his sudden transformations from humor to seriousness and back again. I wanted to be. I wanted to have a normal life. She glanced down at herself, dusty boots and stained gear, her weapons glittering at her belt. Go to art school.
Marry Simon, have 6 kids. There was a slight edge to Jace's voice now.
The corridor made a sharp right turn and he disappeared around it. Clary quickened her step to catch up with him. And gasped. They had come out of the tunnel into an enormous cavern, half filled with an underground lake. The cavern stretched out into the shadows. It was beautiful. The first beautiful thing Clary had seen since they'd entered the demon realm. The roof of the cave was folded stone formed by years of trickling water, and it glowed with the intense blue shimmer of bioluminescent moss. The water below was just as blue, a deep glowing twilight with pillars of quartz jutting up here and there like rods of crystal. The path opened out into a shallow beach of fine, very powdery sand, nearly as soft as ash, that led down to the water. Jace moved down the beach and crouched by the water, thrusting his hands into it. Clary came up behind him, her boots sending up puffs of sand, and knelt down as he splashed water over his face and neck, scrubbing at the stains of black ichor. Be careful, she caught at his arm. The water could be poisonous. He shook his head.
It's not. Look under the surface.
The lake was clear, glassine. The bottom was smooth stone, carved all over with runes that emitted a faint glow. They were runes that spoke of purity, healing, and protection.
I'm sorry, Jace said, snapping her out of her reverie. His hair was wet, plastered to the sharp curves of his cheekbones and temples. I shouldn't have said that about Simon.
Clary put her hands in the water. Small ripples spread from the movement of her fingers. You have to know I wouldn't wish for a different life, she said. This life brought me you. She cupped her hands, bringing the water to her mouth. It was cold and sweet, reviving her flagging energy. He gave her one of his real smiles, not just a quirk of the mouth. Hopefully not just me. Clary searched for words. This life is real, she said. The other life was a lie, a dream. It's just that...
You haven't really been drawing, he said. Not since you started training, not seriously.
No, she said quietly, because it was true.
I wonder sometimes, he said. My father, Valentine, I mean, loved music. He taught me to play Bach, Chopin, Ravel. And I remember once asking why the composers were all mundanes. There were no shadow hunters who had written music. And he said that in their souls, mundanes have a creative spark, but our souls hold a warrior spark. And both sparks can't exist in the same place any more than a flame can divide itself.
So you think the shadow hunter in me is driving out the artist in me? Clary said. But my mother paints. She bit back the pain of having thought of Jocelyn in the past tense, even briefly.
Valentine said that was what heaven had given to mundanes, artistry and the gift of creation, said Jace. That was what made them worth protecting. I don't know if there was any truth to any of that, he added. But if people have a spark in them, then yours burns the brightest, I know. You can fight and draw, and you will.
Impulsively, Clary leaned in to kiss him. His lips were cool. He tasted like sweet water and like Jace. And she would have leaned farther into the kiss, but a sharp zap like static electricity passed between them. She sat back, her lips stinging.
Ouch, she said ruefully.
Jace looked wretched. She reached out to touch his damp hair. Earlier with the gate, I saw your hand spark, the heavenly fire.
I don't have it under control here, not like I did at home, Jace said. There's something about this world. It feels like it's pushing the fire closer to the surface. He looked down at his hands, from which the glow was fading.
I think we both need to be careful. This place is going to affect us more than it does the others. Higher concentration of angel blood.
So we'll be careful. You can control it. Remember the exercises Jordan did with you.
Jordan's dead.
His voice was tight as he stood up, brushing sand from his clothes. He held out a hand to help her up from the ground.
Come on, he said. Let's get back to Alec before he decides Isabel and Simon are having sex off in the caves and starts freaking out.
You know, everyone thinks we're off having sex, said Simon. They're probably freaking out. Hmm, Isabel said. The glow of her witchlight bounced off the ruined walls of the cave. As if we'd have sex in a cave surrounded by hordes of demons. This is reality, Simon, not your fevered imagination. There was a time in my life when the idea that I might have sex one day seemed more likely than being surrounded by hordes of demons, I'll have you know, he said, maneuvering around a pile of tumbled rocks. The whole place reminded him of a trip to the Luray Caverns in Virginia that he'd taken with his mother and Rebecca in middle school. He could see the glitter of mica in the rocks with his vampire sight. He didn't need Isabel's witchlight to guide him, but he imagined she did, so said nothing about it. Isabel muttered something. He wasn't sure what, but he had a feeling it wasn't complimentary. Izzy, he said, is there a reason you're so angry with me? Her next words came out on a sighing rush that sounded like, you're not supposed to be here. Even with his amplified hearing, he could make no sense of it. What? She swung around on him. You weren't supposed to be here, she said, her voice bouncing off the tunnel walls. When we left you in New York, it was so you would be safe. I don't want to be safe, he said. I want to be with you. You want to be with Clary. Simon paused. They were facing each other across the tunnel, both of them still now, Isabel's hands and fists. Is that what this is about, Clary? She was silent. I don't love Clary that way, he said. She was my first love, my first crush, but what I feel about you is totally different. He held up a hand as she started to shake her head. Hear me out, Isabel, he said. If you're asking me to choose between you and my best friend, then yes, I won't choose. Because no one who loved me would force me to make such a pointless choice. It would be like I asked you to choose between me and Alec. Does it bother me seeing Jace and Clary together? No, not at all. In their own incredibly weird way, they're great for each other. They belong together. I don't belong with Clary. Not like that. I belong with you. Do you mean that? She was flushed, color high up in her cheeks. He nodded. Come here, she said, and he let her pull him toward her until he was flush up against her, the rigidity of the cave wall behind them forcing her to curve her body against his. He felt her hand slide up under the back of his t-shirt, her warm fingers bumping gently over the knobs of his spine. Her breath stirred his hair, and his body stirred too, just from being this close to her. Isabel, She slapped his arm, but it wasn't an angry slap. Not now. He nuzzled down into her neck, into the sweet smell of her skin and blood. Then when? She suddenly jerked back, leaving him feeling the unpleasant sensation of having had a bandage ripped away with no ceremony. Did you hear that? He was about to shake his head, when he did hear it, what sounded like a rustle and a cry, coming from the part of the tunnel they hadn't explored yet. Isabel took off at a run, her witchlight bouncing wildly off the walls, and Simon, cursing the fact that shadow hunters were shadow hunters above all else, followed her. The tunnel had only one more curve before it ended in the remains of a shattered metal gate. Beyond what was left of the gate, a plateau of stone that sloped down to a blasted landscape. The plateau was rough, shingled with rock and heaps of weathered stone. Where it met the sand below, the desert started up again, dotted here and there with black, twisted trees. Some of the clouds had cleared, and Isabel, looking up, made a little gasping noise. "Look at the moon," she said. Simon looked and started. It wasn't so much a moon as moons, as if the moon itself had been cracked apart into three pieces. They floated, jagged-edged, like shark's teeth scattered in the sky. Each gave off a dull glow, and in the broken moonlight, Simon's vampire vision picked out the circling movements of creatures. Some seemed like the flying thing that had seized Jace earlier. Others had a distinctly more insectal look. All were hideous. He swallowed. "What can you see?" Isabel asked, knowing that even a far-sighted rune wouldn't give her better vision than Simon's, especially here where runes faded so quickly. "There are demons out there. A lot. Mostly airborne." Isabel's tone was grim. "So they can come out during the day, but they're more active at night." "Yeah." Simon strained his eyes. "There's more. There's a stone plateau that goes for a distance, and then it drops off, and there's something behind it. Something shimmering. A lake, maybe." "Maybe," Simon said. "It almost looks like..."
"Like what?"
"Like a city," he said reluctantly. "Like a demon city."
"Oh."
He saw the implications hit Isabel, and for a moment she paled. Then, being Izzy, she straightened up and nodded, turning away, away from the wrecked and shattered ruins of a world. "We'd better get back and tell the others." Stars carved out of granite hung from the ceiling on silver chains. Jocelyn lay on the stone pallet that served as a bed and stared up at them. She'd already shouted herself hoarse, clawed at the door, thick, made out of oak with steel hinges and bolts, until her hands were bloody, searched her things for a steely, and slammed her fist against the wall so hard she had bruises down her forearm. Nothing had happened. She'd hardly expected it. If Sebastian was anything like his father, and Jocelyn expected that he was a great deal like his father, then he was nothing if not thorough. Thorough and creative. She'd found the pieces of her steely in a heap in one of the corners, shattered and unusable. She still wore the same clothes she'd been wearing at Malliorn's parody of a dinner party, but her shoes had been taken. Her hair had been shorn to just below her shoulders, the ends ragged, as if it had been cut with a blunt razor. Small, colorful cruelties that spoke of an awful, patient nature. Like Valentine, Sebastian could wait to get what he wanted, but he would make the waiting hurt. The door rattled and opened. Jocelyn leapt to her feet, but Sebastian was already in the room. The door shut securely behind him with the snick of a lock. He grinned at her.
"Finally awake, Mother."
"I've been awake," she said. She placed one foot carefully behind the other, giving herself balance and leverage. He snorted. "Don't bother," he said. "I've no intention of attacking you." She said nothing, just watched him as he paced closer. The light that flooded through the narrow windows was bright enough to reflect off his pale white hair, to illuminate the planes of his face. She could see little of herself there. He was all Valentine. Valentine's face, his black eyes, the gestures of a dancer or an assassin. Only his frame, tall and slender, was hers.
"Your werewolf is safe," he said. "For now."
Jocelyn resolutely ignored the quick skip of her heart.
"Show nothing on your face."
Emotion was weakness. That had been Valentine's lesson.
"And Clary," he said. "Clary is also safe. If you care, of course."
He paced around her, a slow, considering circle.
"I never could be quite sure. After all, a mother heartless enough to abandon one of her children."
"You want my child," she blurted, and then closed her mouth sharply.
"Don't give in to him," she thought. "Don't show weakness. Don't give him what he wants." "And yet you kept the box," he said. "You know what box I mean. I left it in the kitchen at Armitage's for you. A little gift. Something to remind you of me. How did you feel when you found it?" He smiled, and there was nothing in his smile of Valentine either. Valentine had been human. He had been a human monster. Sebastian was something else again.
"I know you took it out every year and wept over it," he said. "Why did you do that?"
She said nothing, and he reached over his shoulder to tap the hilt of the Morgenstern blade,
strapped to his back. "I suggest you answer me," he said. "I would have no compunction about cutting off your fingers one by one and using them to fringe a very small rug." She swallowed. "I cried over that box because my child was stolen from me." "A child you never cared about." "That isn't true," she said. "Before you were born, I loved you. The idea of you. I loved you when I felt your heartbeat inside me. Then you were born and you were... a monster?" "Your soul was dead," she said. "I could see it in your eyes when I looked at you." She crossed her arms over her chest, repressing the impulse to shiver. "Why am I here?" His eyes glittered. "You tell me, since you know me so well, Mother." "Melion drugged us," she said. "I would guess from his actions that the Fair Folk are your allies, that they have been for some time, that they believe you will win the Shadowhunter War, and they wish to be on the winning side. Besides, they have resented Nephilim for longer and more strongly than any other downworlders. They have helped you attack the Institutes. They have swelled your ranks while you have recruited new Shadowhunters with the Infernal Cup. In the end, when you have grown powerful enough, you will betray and destroy them, for you despise them at heart." There was a long pause while she looked at him levelly. "Am I right?" She saw the pulse jump in his throat as he exhaled, and knew she had been. "When did you guess all that?" he said through his teeth. "I didn't guess. I know you. I knew your father. And you are like him, in your nurture, if not your nature." He was still staring at her, his eyes fathomless and black. "If you hadn't thought I was dead," he said, "if you'd known I lived, would you have looked for me? Would you have kept me?" "I would have," she said. "I would have tried to raise you, to teach you the right things, to change you. I do blame myself for what you are. I always have." "You would have raised me." He blinked, almost sleepily. "You would have raised me, hating me as you did." She nodded. "Do you think I would have been different then? More like her?" It took her a moment before she realized. "Clary," she said. "You mean Clary." The name of her daughter hurt to say. She missed Clary fiercely, and at the same time was terrified for her. Sebastian loved her, she thought. If he loved anyone, he loved his sister. And if there was anyone who knew how deadly it was to be loved by someone like Sebastian, it was Jocelyn. "We'll never know," she said finally. "Valentine took that away from us." "You should have loved me," he said. And now he sounded petulant. "I'm your son. You should love me now, no matter what I'm like. Whether I'm like her or not." "Really?" Jocelyn cut him off mid-breath. "Do you love me, just because I'm your mother?" "You're not my mother," he said, with a curl of his lip. "Come. Watch this. Let me show you what my real mother has given me the power to do." He took a steely from his belt. It sent a jolt through Jocelyn. She forgot sometimes that he was a Shadowhunter and could use the tools of a Shadowhunter. With the steely, he drew on the stone wall of the room. Runes. A design she recognized. Something all Shadowhunters knew how to do. The stone began to turn transparent, and Jocelyn braced herself to see what was beyond the walls. Instead, she saw the consul's room at the guard, in Alicante. Gia sat behind her enormous desk, covered in stacks of files. She looked exhausted, her black hair liberally sprinkled with strands of white. She had a file open on her desk before her. Jocelyn could see grainy photographs of a beach, sand, blue-gray sky. "Gia Penhallow," Sebastian said. Gia's head jerked up. She rose to her feet, the file sliding to the floor in a mess of paper. "Who is it? Who's there?" "You don't recognize me?"
Sebastian said, a smirk in his voice. Gia stared desperately ahead of her. It was obvious that whatever she was looking at, the image wasn't clear.
Sebastian, she breathed.
But it hasn't been 2 days yet. Jocelyn pushed past him. Gia, she said.
Gia, don't listen to anything he says. He's a liar.
It's too soon, Gia said, as if Jocelyn hadn't spoken. And Jocelyn realized, to her horror, that Gia couldn't see or hear her. It was as if she weren't there.
I may not have an answer for you, Sebastian.
Oh, I think you do, Sebastian said. Don't you?
Gia straightened her shoulders.
If you insist, she said icily. The Clave has discussed your request. We will not deliver to you either Jace Lightwood or Clarissa Fairchild.
Clarissa Morgenstern, Sebastian said, a muscle in his cheek twitching. She is my sister.
I call her by the name she prefers, as I call you, said Gia. We will not make a bargain in our blood with you. Not because we think it is more valuable than Downworlder blood. Not because we do not want our prisoners back. But because we cannot condone your tactics of fear.
As if I sought your approval, Sebastian sneered. You do understand what this means. I could send you Luke Garraway's head on a stick.
Jocelyn felt as if someone had punched her in the stomach. You could, Gia said, but if you harm any of the prisoners, it will be war to the death. And we believe you have as much to fear from a war with us as we do from a war with you.
You believe incorrectly, Sebastian said. And I think if you look, you will discover that it hardly matters that you've decided not to deliver Jason Clary to me, all neatly wrapped up like an early Christmas present.
What do you mean?
Gia's voice sharpened.
Oh, it would have been convenient if you had decided to deliver them, said Sebastian. Less trouble for me, less trouble for all of us. But it's too late now, you see. They're already gone.
He twirled his steely, and the window he had opened to the world of Alicante closed on Gia's astonished face. The wall was a smooth, blank canvas of stone once again.
Well, he said, slipping the steely into his weapon's belt. That was amusing, don't you think?
Jocelyn swallowed against a dry throat. If Jace and Clary aren't in Alicante, where are they? Where are they, Sebastian?
He stared at her for a moment and then laughed, a laugh as pure and cold as ice water. He was still laughing when he went to the door and walked out of it, letting it lock shut behind him.
16. The Terrors of the Earth. Night had fallen over Alicante, and the stars shone down like bright sentinels, making the demon towers and the water in the canals, half ice now, shimmer. Emma sat on the windowsill of the twins' bedroom and looked out over the city. Emma had always thought she would come to Alicante for the first time with her parents, that her mother would show her the places she had known growing up, the now-closed academy where her mother had gone to school, her grandparents' house, that her father would show her the monument to the Carstairs family he always spoke of proudly. She'd never imagined she would first look on the demon towers of Alicante with her heart so swelled up with grief that sometimes it felt like it was choking her. Moonlight spilled in through the attic windows, illuminating the twins. Tiberius had spent the day in a vicious tantrum, kicking the bars of the baby's crib when he was told he couldn't leave the house, shrieking for Mark when Julian tried to calm him down, and finally smashing his fist through a glass jewelry box. He was too young for healing runes, so Livy had wrapped her arms around him to keep him still while Julian picked the glass out of his younger brother's bloody hand with tweezers and then carefully bandaged it. Ty had collapsed into bed finally, though he hadn't slept until Livy, as calm as always, had lain down beside him and put her hand over his bandaged one. He was asleep now, head on the pillow, turned toward his sister. It was only when Ty was sleeping that you could see how uncommonly beautiful a child he was, with his head of dark Botticelli curls and delicate features, anger and despair smoothed away by exhaustion.
Despair, Emma thought. It was the right word for the loneliness in Tavi's screaming, for the emptiness at the heart of Ty's anger and Livy's eerie calm. No one who was 10 should feel despair, but she supposed there was no other way to describe the words that pulsed through her blood when she thought of her parents. Every heartbeat a mournful litany. Gone, gone, gone. Hey. Emma looked up at the sound of a quiet voice from the doorway and saw Julian standing at the entrance to the room. His own dark curls, shades lighter than Ty's black, were tousled, and his face was pale and tired in the moonlight. He looked skinny, thin wrists protruding from the cuffs of his sweater. He was holding something furry in his hand. Are they... Emma nodded. Asleep? Yeah. Julian stared at the twins' bed. Up close, Emma could see Ty's bloody handprints on Jules' shirt. He hadn't had time to change his clothes. He was clutching a large stuffed bee that Helen had retrieved from the Institute when the Clave had gone back to search the place. It had been Tiberius's for as long as Emma could remember. Ty had been screaming for it before he'd fallen asleep. Julian crossed the room and bent down to tuck it against his little brother's chest, then paused to gently untangle one of Ty's curls before he drew back. Emma took his hand as he moved it, and he let her. His skin was cold, as if he'd been leaning out the window into the night air. She turned his hand and drew with her finger on the skin of his forearm. It was something they'd done since they were small children and didn't want to get caught talking during lessons. Over the years, they'd gotten so good at it that they could map out detailed messages on each other's hands, arms, even their shoulders through their t-shirts. D-I-D-Y-O-U-E-A-T, she spelled out. Julian shook his head, still staring at Livy and Ty. His curls were sticking up in tufts as if he'd been raking his hands through his hair. She felt his fingers light on her upper arm. N-O-T-H-U-N-G-R-Y. Too bad. Emma slid off the windowsill. Come on. She shooed him out of the room onto the hallway landing. It was a small space with a steep set of stairs descending into the main house. The Penhallows had made it clear the children were welcome to food whenever they wanted it, but there were no set meal times and certainly no family meals. Everything was eaten hastily at tables in the attic, with Tavi and even Drew covering themselves in food, and only Jules responsible for cleaning them up afterward, for washing their clothes, and even for making sure they ate at all. The moment the door closed behind them, Julian slumped against the wall, tipping his head back, his eyes closed. His thin chest rose and fell quickly under his t-shirt. Emma hung back, unsure what to do. "Jules?" she said. He looked toward her. His eyes were dark in the low light, fringed by thick lashes. She could tell that he was fighting not to cry. Julian was part of Emma's earliest memories. They had been putting cribs together as babies by their parents. Apparently, she had crawled out and bitten through her lip when she'd hit the ground. She hadn't cried, but Julian had screamed at the sight of her bleeding until their parents had come running. They had taken their first steps together. Emma first, as always, Julian afterward, hanging determinedly onto her hand. They had started training at the same time, had gotten their first runes together, voyance on his right hand and on her left. Julian never wanted to lie, but if Emma was in trouble, Julian lied for her. Now they had lost their parents together. Julian's mother had died 2 years before, and watching the Blackthorns go through that loss had been terrible, but this was a different experience altogether. It was shattering, and Emma could feel the breakage, could feel them coming apart and being glued back together in a new and different way. They were becoming something else, she and Julian. Something that was more than best friends, but not family either. "Jules," she said again and took his hand. For a moment it lay, still and cold, in hers. Then he seized her wrist and gripped it tightly. "I don't know what to do," he said. "I can't take care of them. Tavi's just a baby. Ty hates me. He's your brother, and he's only 10. He doesn't hate you." Julian took a shuddering breath. "Maybe." "They'll figure something out," Emma said. "Your uncle lived through the London attack, so when this is all over, you'll move in with him, and he'll look after you and the others. It won't be your responsibility." Julian shrugged. "I barely remember Uncle Arthur. He sends us books in Latin. Sometimes he comes home from London for Christmas. The only one of us who can read Latin is Ty, and he just learned it to annoy everyone. So he gives bad gifts. He remembered you at Christmas. He cares enough to take care of you. They won't have to just send you to a random institute or to Idris. Julian swung around to face her. That's not what you think is going to happen to you, is it? He demanded. Because it won't. You'll stay with us. Not necessarily, Emma said. She felt as if her heart were being squeezed. The thought of leaving Jules, Livy, Drew, Tavi, even Ty made her feel sick and lost, like she was being swept out into the ocean alone. It depends on your uncle, doesn't it? Whether he wants me in the Institute, whether he's willing to take me in. Julian's voice was fierce. Julian was rarely fierce, but when he was, his eyes went nearly black and he shook all over as if he were freezing. It's not up to him. You're going to stay with us. Jules, Emma began, and froze as voices drifted up from downstairs. Gia and Patrick Penhallow were passing through the corridor below. She wasn't sure why she was nervous. It wasn't as if they weren't allowed full run of the house, but the idea of being caught wandering around this late at night by the consul made her feel awkward. Smirking little bastard was right, of course, Gia was saying. She sounded frayed. Not only are Jace and Clary gone, but Isabel and Alec along with them. The Lightwoods are absolutely frantic. Patrick's deep voice rumbled an answer. Well, Alec is an adult, technically. Hopefully he's looking after the rest of them. Gia made a muffled, impatient noise in response. Emma leaned forward, trying to hear her. Could have left a note, at least, she was saying. They were clearly furious when they fled. They probably thought we were going to deliver them to Sebastian. Gia sighed. Ironic, considering how hard we fought against that. We assume Clary made a portal to get them out of here, but as to how they've blocked us from tracking them, we don't know. They're nowhere on the map. It's like they disappeared off the face of the earth. Just like Sebastian has, said Patrick. Doesn't it make sense to assume they're wherever he is? That the place itself is shielding them, not runes or some other kind of magic? Emma leaned farther forward, but the rest of their words faded with distance. She thought she heard a mention of the spiral labyrinth, but she wasn't positive. When she straightened up again, she saw Julian looking at her. You know where they are, he said, don't you? Emma put a finger to her lips and shook her head. Don't ask. Julian huffed out a laugh. Only you. How did you... No, don't tell me. I don't even want to know. He looked at her searchingly, the way he did sometimes when he was trying to tell if she was lying or not. You know, he said, there's a way they couldn't send you away from our institute. They'd have to let you stay. Emma raised an eyebrow. Let's hear it, genius. We could... He started, then stopped, swallowed, and started again. We could become Parabatai. He said it shyly, half turning his face away from her so that the shadows partially hid his expression. Then they couldn't separate us, he added. Not ever. Emma felt her heart turn over. Jules, being Parabatai is a big deal, she said. It's forever. He looked at her, his face open and guileless. There was no trickery in Jules, no darkness. Aren't we forever? He asked. Emma thought. She couldn't imagine her life without Julian. It was just a sort of black hole of terrible loneliness. Nobody ever understanding her the way he did, getting her jokes the way he did, protecting her the way he did. Not protecting her physically, but protecting her feelings, her heart. No one to be happy with or angry with or bounce ridiculous ideas off. No one to complete her sentences or pick all the cucumbers out of her salad because she hated them, or eat the crusts off her toast or find her keys when she lost them. She began, and then there was a sudden crash from the bedroom. She exchanged panicked looks with Julian before they burst back into Ty and Livy's room, to find Livia sitting up on the bed looking sleepy and puzzled. Ty was at the window, a poker in his hand. The window had a hole punched through the middle of it, and the window glass was glittering across the floor. Ty, Julian said, clearly terrified by the shards piled around his little brother's bare feet. Don't move, I'll get a broom for the glass. Ty glared out at both of them from beneath his wild dark hair. He held up something in his right hand.
Emma squinted in the moonlight. Was it an acorn?
It's a message, Ty said, letting the poker drop from his hand. Fairies often choose objects from the natural world to send their messages in. Acorns, leaves, flowers.
You're saying that's a message from fairies? Julian said dubiously.
Don't be stupid, said Tiberius. Of course it's not a message from fairies, it's a message from Mark, and it's addressed to the consul.
It must be daytime here, Luke thought, for Raphael was curled in one corner of the stone room, his body tense even in sleep, his dusky curls pillowed on his arm. It was hard to tell, given that there was little to see beyond the window but thick mist. He needs to feed, Magnus said, looking at Raphael with a tense gentleness that surprised Luke. He hadn't thought there was much love lost between the warlock and the vampire. They had circled each other as long as he had known them, polite, occupying their different spheres of power within the downworld of New York City. You know each other, Luke said, realizing. He was still leaning against the wall by the narrow stone window, as if the view outside, clouds and yellowish poison, could tell him anything. Magnus raised an eyebrow, the way he did when someone asked an obviously stupid question. I mean, Luke clarified, you knew each other. Before. Before what? Before you were born? Let me make something clear to you, werewolf. Almost everything in my life happened before you were born. Magnus's eyes lingered on the sleeping Raphael. Despite the sharpness in his tone, his expression was almost gentle. 50 years ago, he said, in New York, a woman came to me and asked me to save her son from a vampire. And the vampire was Raphael? No, said Magnus. Her son was Raphael. I couldn't save him. It was too late. He was already turned. He sighed, and in his eyes suddenly Luke saw his great, great age, the wisdom and sorrow of centuries. The vampire had killed all his friends. I don't know why he turned Raphael instead. He saw something in him. Will, strength, beauty. I don't know. He was a child when I found him. A Caravaggio angel painted in blood. He still looks like a child, said Luke. Raphael had always reminded him of a choir boy gone bad, with his sweet young face and his black eyes older than the moon. Not to me, said Magnus. He sighed. I hope he survives this, he said. The New York vampires need someone with sense to run their clan, and Maureen's hardly that. You hope Raphael survives this, Luke said. Come on, how many people has he killed? Magnus turned cold eyes on him. Who among us has bloodless hands? What did you do, Lucian Greymar, to gain yourself a pack, 2 packs, of werewolves? That was different. That was necessary. What did you do when you were in the circle? Magnus demanded. At that, Luke was silent. There were days he hated to think about. Days of blood and silver. Days of Valentine by his side, telling him everything was all right, silencing his conscience. I'm worried about my family now, he said. I'm worried about Clary and Jocelyn and Amatis. I can't worry about Raphael, too. And you, I thought you'd be worried about Alec. Magnus breathed out through gritted teeth. I don't want to talk about Alec. All right. Luke said nothing else, just rested against the cold stone wall and watched Magnus fiddle with his chains. A moment later, Magnus spoke again. Shadow hunters, he said. They get in your blood, under your skin. I've been with vampires, werewolves, fairies, warlocks like me, and humans. So many fragile humans. But I always told myself I wouldn't give my heart to a shadow hunter. I've so nearly loved them, been charmed by them. Generations of them, sometimes. Edmund and Will, and James and Lucy. The ones I saved and the ones I couldn't. His voice choked off for a second, and Luke, staring in amazement,
realized that this was the most of Magnus Bane's real, true emotions that he had ever seen. And Clary, too, I loved, for I watched her grow up. But I've never been in love with the Shadowhunter, not until Alec. For they have the blood of angels in them, and the love of angels is a high and holy thing. Is that so bad? Luke asked. Magnus shrugged. Sometimes it comes down to a choice, he said, between saving one person and saving the whole world. I've seen it happen, and I'm selfish enough to want the person who loves me to choose me. But Nephilim will always choose the world. I look at Alec, and I feel like Lucifer in Paradise Lost. Abashed the devil stood, and felt how awful goodness is. He meant it in the classic sense, awful, as an inspiring awe. And awe is well and good, but it's poison to love. Love has to be between equals. He's just a boy, said Luke. Alec. He's not perfect. And you're not fallen. We're all fallen, said Magnus. And he wrapped himself up in his chains and was silent.
You have got to be kidding me, Maya said. Here, seriously? Bat rubbed his fingers over the back of his neck, ruffling up his short hair.
Is that a Ferris wheel?
Maya turned around in a slow circle. They were standing inside the darkened, massive Toys R Us on 42nd Street. Outside the windows, the neon glow of Times Square lit the night with blue, red, and green. The store stretched upward, level on level of toys, bright plastic superheroes, plush stuffed bears, pink and glittery Barbies. The Ferris wheel rose above them, each metal strut carrying a dangling plastic carriage decorated with decals. Maya had a dim memory of her mother taking her and her brother to ride on the wheel when they were 10 years old. Daniel had tried to push Maya over the edge and had made her cry.
This is crazy, she whispered.
Maya. It was one of the younger wolves, skinny and nervous with dreadlocks. Maya had worked to cure them all of the habit of calling her lady or madam or anything else but Maya, even if she was a temporary pack leader. We've swept the place. If there were security guards, someone's taken them out already. Great, thanks. Maya looked at Bat, who shrugged. There were about 15 other pack wolves with them, looking incongruous among the Disney princess dolls and stuffed reindeer. Could you... The Ferris wheel started up suddenly with a screech and a groan. Maya jumped back, almost knocking into Bat, who took her by the shoulders. They both stared as the wheel started to turn and the music began to play. It's a small world, Maya was pretty sure, though there were no words, just tinny instrumentals.
Wolves, ooh, wolves, sang out a voice, and Maureen, looking like a Disney princess in a pink gown and a rainbow tiara, tripped barefoot out from a stacked display of candy canes.
She was followed by about 20 vamps, as pale-faced as dolls or mannequins in the sickly light. Lily strode just behind her, her black hair pinned back perfectly, her heels clicking on the floor. She looked Maya up and down as if she'd never seen her before.
Hello, hello, Maureen burbled. I'm so glad to meet you.
Glad to meet you as well, Maya said stiffly. She put a hand out for Maureen to shake, but Maureen just giggled and seized up a sparkly one from a nearby carton. She waved it in the air.
So sorry to hear about Sebastian killing all your wolfy friends, Maureen said. He's a nasty boy.
Maya flinched at a vision of Jordan's face, the memory of the heavy, helpless weight of him in her arms. She steeled herself.
That's what I wanted to talk to you about, she said. Sebastian, he's trying to threaten Downworlders.
She paused as Maureen, humming, began to climb to the top of a stack of boxes of Christmas Barbies, each one dressed in a red and white Santa miniskirt.
Trying to get us to turn against the Shadowhunters, Maya went on, slightly flummoxed. Was Maureen even paying attention?
If we unite...
Oh, yes, Maureen said, perching atop the highest box. We should unite against Shadowhunters, definitely.
No, I said. I heard what you said. Maureen's eyes flashed.
It was silly. You werewolves are always full of silly ideas. Sebastian isn't very nice, but the Shadow Hunters are worse. They make up stupid rules and they make us follow them. They steal from us.
Steal? Maya craned her head back to see Maureen.
They stole Simon from me. I had him and now he's gone. I know who took him. Shadow Hunters.